My name is Colin Mutchler. Welcome to Remembering Ourselves. This is a show where we explore the music and practices of our past to ground ourselves as we look forward and hopefully deepen our relationships with each other and the natural world. We've got a great show here for here with you today. I have with me Corbett Redford, who is a fellow Monterio parent out in West County and also a part of the duo Bobby Joe Ebola and the Children's McNuggets. And you'll hear more about it in a second. But Happy New Year. I'm going to start off by just doing my official responsibilities, reading a public service announcement, and thanking our underwriters here at KOWS. We're broadcasting at 92.5 FM in Occidental, California, streaming globally at KOWSFM.com. First, a public service announcement. Join the Sebastopol Senior Center for a weekly event called Improvising for Life, held on Wednesdays from 3 to 4. The classes will teach you how to be present and tap into your silly, imaginative, childlike self through improv. This is good for us, Corbett, today. Improv is a way of living authentically through an attitude of life that gets us out of our heads and into our hearts, responding rather than reacting and laughing heartily. All ages are welcome to join in. You must register in advance through the Senior Center, 707-829-2440. Classes for non-members run $10 per class and are hosted by instructor Deanna Lamb, an avid improver who has played and performed as part of improv groups for more than 15 years. In terms of our support, Cows thanks Fawn Necton of Open Door Insurance Services, a family-owned and operated insurance agency combining community sensibility with solutions based on product knowledge and expertise in personal, business, specialty, and nonprofit insurance. They could be contacted at 707-874-2666 or on their website at opendoorins.com. Programming on KOWS Community Radio is made possible in part by the Mark West Area Chamber of Commerce, and we thank them for their support. The Chamber is assisting with the development of a community park, another example of their commitment to enhancing commerce through community stewardship. You can find out more by visiting them online at markwest.org or calling them at 707-578-7975. And lastly, programming on KOWS Community Radio is underwritten in part by the Occidental Community Council. We thank them for their generous support. The council strives to meet the unmet needs of the Occidental area, and the public is invited to its meetings every third Saturday of the month at 10:30 a.m. at the Occidental Community Center in downtown Occidental. Thanks again for being here. Again, this is Remembering Ourselves. I'm your host, Colin Mutchler. And before we get started with our guest today, I wanted to play a song from Bobby Joe Ebola and the Children's McNuggets. This is called Life is Excellent.
Life is excellent. The tap water tastes like excrement. The skies rain. But I gotta pay the rent. Life
Love it. Life is excellent. From Bobby Joe Ebola and the Children's McNuggets. This is from a song and an EP that came out in 2010. Again, this is Remembering Ourselves. I'm your host, Colin Mutchler. Every show we have a guest. I ask a guest to bring with them two songs from their early life before they chose their own music, two songs from their coming of age when they first started to really fall in love with music themselves, and then two songs from these times that we're in right now. And my guest this week is Corbett Redford. He is a friend and fellow father and dad at the Monterey School where our kids go, but he's also a musician of the rock, folk rock duo that has been around the kind of Bay Area punk scene for a long time. Welcome to the show, Corbett.
Colin, thanks for having me. It's really great to be here. I needed this today. I needed to come in and speak from the heart.
Totally. Yeah. I think if you're listening today, it's Monday, January 20th. It is a unique day in the world. We have a transition of presidents. We have Martin Luther, honoring the legendary, amazing human Martin Luther King Jr., and then also happens to be this college football championship tonight. And also, I think we both noticed, a historic thing that happened that the indigenous activist Leonard Peltier was, his sentence was commuted and he's going to be let out of jail, which is also a historic thing that happened today. But it's all these things. In these times where we have all information accessible to all our fingertips, it is in our bodies, it is hard to relax.
Our brains aren't supposed to be processing this much information. Some people react to it poorly. We all react to it poorly.
Totally.
Yeah. Music, though.
I know. Music helps. I mean, yes. The first question I was going to ask you is kind of like to lay the groundwork about like where you grew up. I, from what I understand, you're Bay Area for a long time. Is it from the beginning?
Yeah. 47 years in the East Bay before I moved to the North Bay. So I was born in San Pablo, California, in a hospital that isn't there anymore, to two kids who listened to way too much Creedence Clearwater Revival and Canned Heat, and they decided they were going to go back to the land where the Dixie Fire happened and basically burned down the whole town. Wow. So actually, 47 years in the East Bay, I say, but actually I spent 3 years up in a place called Greenville, California, and I believe Amador County. So from like 3 to 5.
Got it.
And a couple weeks in kindergarten there. So my parents heard the Creedence and thought, we're going to go back to the land. And there's the back to the land movement in California, right? So a lot of people wanted to get,
Is this like, what era is this? What years are we talking about?
So early 70s.
Okay.
Yeah. And so they went up there and they spent, before they went to Greenville, they went to North San Juan, which is, I guess, up by Grass Valley, and lived on a fruitarian commune for a while. It didn't last long. and then we all went up to Greenville, and my father built a home in the middle of the woods. And then, it all kind of came crashing down, and we all came back to the East Bay. Hmm. So I was born in the East Bay, went away for 3 years, and then spent the rest of my life until I was 47, living in mostly West Contra Costa County, Pinole, El Sobrante. I said it wrong. El Sobrante. If you're from that area, I just said it wrong.
And what was it like to get this invitation to like gather songs? It seems like most people when I ask them, they're like, "All right, cool," and they like think about it a lot and it's hard. I felt like you responded instantly with like your six songs.
I thought I'm a blab trap. I want to talk about that. No, I mean really. I thought that's a really exciting premise. Like. Because the three kind of regions of music in your life that you're talking about all are really, they're very meaningful. Mm-hmm. And I instantly thought, geez, like if I'm thinking of music in context of that, it actually gives a pretty good picture of who I am.
Totally.
Strangely, So I'm excited to be here and to talk about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, maybe share a little bit about, I'll play the first two songs you chose, but just like, What do they represent? Like, what's in terms of what was the music that was on in your household or that you heard around you, you know, before you chose your own music?
So there's two kind of regions there. I had when we came back from Amador County, my parents divorced and everything kind of fell apart. My father brought us to his parents' house, who my grandpa Corbett Redford the first. And my grandma Dorothy Mae Heath from Arkansas and Indiana, Indiana and Arkansas respectively. You know, they're kids of the 20s and 30s, right? So, you know, they're listening to a lot of Glenn Miller. You know, a lot of, I guess what would be not old timey music, but you know, and my grandfather loved to play Bing Crosby, and actually, if there was somebody in my life who showed me that it was okay to sing, and it would be my grandpa mimicking Bing Crosby. He'd just do it in the kitchen all the time. And, you know, people always told him he looked like Gene Kelly. And actually, strangely, when you look at photos, it's...
He did?
He did, very much so. And my father always looked like... Everyone said he looked like Tom Selleck. And me, everyone tells me I look like angry Fred Flintstone. So, so I'm okay with it. But yeah, so my grandfather and my grandmother, they played a lot of joyous music. A lot of... but also too, like very, if you look at, I guess the first song, Swinging on a Star by Bing Crosby that I put on the list, it actually kind of gave me an early framework of what a song can be, because that song, he goes from kind of animal to animal, and he takes a stanza, he takes a verse, and he writes about each of, you know, I don't know if he wrote it, to be honest. Back then, I guess a lot of people had songwriters, but it's playful. And
yeah, it's true. When I listened to it earlier, I was like, it does kind of fit the spirit of some of the music. Well, let's listen to those two, and then we'll keep talking about these times.
Sure.
This is Bing Crosby, Swinging on a Star, from an album by that name, I think 1954.
Would you like to swing on a star? Carry moonbeams home in a jar? And be better off than you are? Or would you rather be a mule? A mule is an animal with long funny ears, kicks up at anything he hears.
His back is brawny but his brain is weak. He's just plain stupid with a stubborn streak.
And by the way, if you hate to go to school, you may grow up to be a mule.
Or would you like to swing on a star? Carry moonbeams home in a jar? And be better off than you are?
Or would you rather be a pig?
A pig is an animal with dirt on his face. His shoes are a terrible disgrace. He has no manners when he eats his food. He's fat and lazy and extremely rude.
But if you don't care a feather or a fig, you may grow up to be a pig.
Or would you like to swing on a star? Carry moonbeams home in a jar. And be better off than you are.
Or would you rather be a fish?
A fish won't do anything but swim in a brook. He can't write his name or read a book. To fool the people is his only thought. And though he's slippery, he still gets caught.
But then if that sort of life is what you wish...
That's Swinging on a Star from Bing Crosby. The next song I'm going to play from that same era is called The Little Old Lady from Pasadena. From Jan and Jan, the little old lady from Pasadena, from Jan and Dean.
It's the little old lady from Pasadena. The little old lady from Pasadena. Has a pretty little flower bed of white gardenias. But parked in a rickety old garage is a brand new shiny red super stock car. And everybody's saying that there's nobody meaner than the little old lady from Pasadena.
street, don't try to choose her. You might drive a goer, but you'll never lose her. Well, she's gonna get a ticket now, sooner or later, 'cause she can't keep her foot off the accelerator. And everybody's saying that there's nobody mean of this little old lady from Pasadena. She's the terror of Colorado Boulevard.
It's the little old lady from Pasadena.
That is the little old lady from Pasadena from Jan and Dean. And Corbett was correcting me. That is from a slightly different era. The Bing Crosby song was more like the music of the grandparents in your era, whereas this one was more your parents, right?
Exactly. Yeah, my father listened to this on the oldies station, the local oldies station in East Bay, KFRC. And it, you know, it's another song that has humor in it, which, like, I kind of went on to use humor as a tool in music, mostly. So Swing on a Star, there's funny aspects of that, and there's also these little moral tales in them,
right?
You know, about like what the animal does and what happens to the animal because it's stubborn, or, you know, these kinds of things. And that, and this one was just silly. It's about an old lady, you know, driving a hot rod around, and, you know, and my father, I want to be careful here. He was supposed to be a singer for Capitol Recording School, and he got into a big accident. Wow. Where a taxi vaulted over the back of his car, and it injured his back. And then they took him to the hospital, and they dug around in his back and broke off a tool in his back,
huh.
And then sewed it up. So he kind of like lived. He's lived an entire life of pain, right?
Wow.
So he was supposed to be a singer, and this was one of the songs where he loved the high harmonies of it,
mm-hmm.
just like the Beach Boys. These were contemporaries of the Beach Boys, you know. So the humor involved is great there, but it also too is a little bit of an indicator for me of the kind of the milquetoast kind of stuff my father listened to. He wasn't a kind of a prude in his own life, but he did try to basically anything with any kind of strut. I'll say this. Was kind of mocked, you know, like anything that I
just
tried,
say more about me about this by strut.
Well, like anything with attitude, any kind of rock,
yeah,
real,
yeah.
Like as I started getting into my own music, which is the next part
totally.
Of your awesome program, and which is very corollary for me.
Mm-hmm.
It was things that friends would give me that I would basically hide, you know, because it's kind of like my father wanted to be a singer.
Mm.
Always kind of, I don't want to say it, it's hard, it's just a little hard to talk about. He kind of never has seen me as a singer, and
uh-huh,
I've recorded uh-huh. over 100 songs,
but he just can't see you in that way.
Played over 2,000 songs.
He's got something going on about it.
The first time we ever played a song for him, my bandmate was like, your dad's over to visit, let's.
And is it, you mean, like, yeah. You're saying like this type of stuff he liked was more like the polished upright, the, he didn't like the punk, like rebellious stuff, so that's not, you're not doing real stuff, you're doing like something like that?
No, I think it was that he was supposed to be the singer. I mean, in fact, when my band first sat down, because we're an acoustic folk band at our core who became punk adjacent,
mm-hmm.
like because of our use of political satire and all these kinds of, and because of kind of our energy, I
yeah.
guess. But we weren't always even accepted by punk.
Mm-hmm.
But my father, who was the singer, we sat down in front of him to play this new song with harmonies that we had made. And he looks to my bandmate and he says, you know, Corbett was never the singer in the family. You know, he was always off key in the the car rides.
Right. He almost like wants to make sure he claims that for himself.
He claims that for himself. And so, you know, so it was okay for me to listen to.
That must be tough. That's challenging.
It's challenging. But also because he would, this music that he would play that had a big effect on me. So like Jan and Dean, there they are using humor. Jan and Dean, there they are using harmony, mm-hmm. right? So that was his bag, was that kind of stuff. And so when I eventually started finding my own music through my friends or whatever, he would hear something and he would kind of, it's almost like, oh, you know, check out your britches. Oh, you really, you think you're a cool guy.
Oh, right.
You know,
right.
Listening to this stuff, you know, like, what are you? And so that's that I went from this kind of like milk toast kind of, you know, I want to say, yeah, not puritanical, but kind of prudish.
Yeah.
50s.
Which at least my stereotype of that is that was the times too. There was like the more popular music of like the 50s and stuff was more in that direction. And then, you know, as more, as rock and roll emerged in its various forms, it more diversified lots of things.
Absolutely. And rock and roll had to be kind of careful about it, right? So like, you know, the old analogy, I use a lyric actually in a song I think you're going to play later. When I say it's not supplements or walking the dog that lifted myself, you know, out of the slog.
Mm-hmm.
Walking the dog is an analogy for having sex, right? So, like, but so these old rock songs like Walking the Dog, right? They're using these things that they can kind of get through, right?
Right.
And so, yeah, I don't know. I think both of those songs represent an early era for me. My grandparents, my father, and the kinds of music they liked. And for however much, you know, there's so much joy when I think of Swinging on the Star. My grandfather sang that all the time.
It's beautiful.
It's so beautiful. In the car together. And even with Jan and Dean, you know, first hearing that laughing and everything. But the Jan and Dean thing was really a pivot to where I went, where it was like,
Do you remember when that was? Like, was, because if everybody, it's different. Was it like high school? Was it after high school? Was it earlier than that? Like,
it was earlier than that. It was the seventh grade. The seventh grade where it was like everything was okay. So the strange thing was that my sister or my brother, they could listen.
You were the oldest. You were saying oldest of six.
But you know, they could listen to whatever they wanted for some reason. But whenever I listened to something, it was. Yeah, you know, I mean, there's a lot of, I come from a lot of trauma, a lot of stuff, you know, but like whenever I wanted to listen to anything, it was kind of mocked, you know? And so by the seventh grade, my friend Kevin McGowan gave me DJ Jazzy Jeff's and the Fresh Prince, he's the DJ, I'm the rapper, a cassette, In Excess's Kick, and Weird Al's Dare to Be Stupid. And
who gave it to you again?
This kid named
Kevin. A friend of yours.
Yeah, in middle school, in junior high, and I look at, you know, you see Michael Hutchence on the cover of In Excess's Kick, and they just look so cool, and you're like, what is this? And you see, you know, Will Smith and you know.
Yeah, I remember that moment too.
Yeah, and it was like, to me, it was like I remember hiding those cassettes. Like, I don't think my father would have like smashed them,
but you just didn't want to get his judgment on it right away. You wanted to like spend some time with it.
Yeah, I wanted to spend his time. And again, I'm glad I got the whole like harmonies of Jan and Dean and the Beach Boys and all the hokey stuff. And Beach Boys, I don't call them hokey, but like, I'm glad I got all that stuff. But when I started finding my own stuff, I really it was a big deal.
I hear it. I feel it from what you're saying.
I coveted it, and I mean, and Weird Al is a whole other can of worms from.
Yeah, maybe let's talk about that after we just play these two songs, because I agree. I have some relationship to him too. Well, let's play the next two songs. So again, we're here. This is Remembering Ourselves. I'm your host, Colin Mutchler. We're here with Corbett, and these are two songs that. We're going to play parts of that are coming from his coming of age, which is actually pretty early. It's kind of like when he first started to really declare independence from his parents' music. So we're talking like middle school-ish and a little bit past that. So the first one we're going to hear is Never Tear Us Apart off of In Excess's album Kick.
Don't ask me what you know is true. Don't have to tell you I love your precious heart. I was standing, you were there. Two worlds collided. Tear us apart. We could live that we could fly. 'Cause we all have wings, but some of us don't know why. I was standing, you were there. Could never, ever tear us apart.
That's Never Tear Us Apart from INXS. I remember that too. That was a great album. Next one is from another all-time great, you know, not everybody can go deep with him, but I know Corbett's been there, and me and my kids love this guy. This is Dare to Be Stupid by the one and only Weird Al Yankovic. Weird Al Yankovic, to be stupid.
The goat, as the kids would say. They don't say that anymore, do they?
No, but we were just talking while we're listening about Weird Al is not currently in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And it was partly Corbett's analysis, I'll let you say more to it, is something about when humor is used in music, it almost like for certain minds and certain like awards and stuff kind of like doesn't count or has some novelty to it.
I think that there's a new book called, I think, Taking Funny Music Seriously. And it's there's a word for it. They call it novelty music. When you use humor as a tool in your music, you're seen as a not a real musician. And my wife, she says, so every once in a while, she'll say, "Oh, you should write a song about that." And she sees me shirk, and she's like, "If anybody could say it to you, I could say it." I was like, "Okay, you have the right to say it." But people will like, "Oh, you wrote a song about a song called Pee Pee Poo Poo Forever." And it's like, yeah, but that song comes from like a real, real dark place about trauma and truth and about rising above it. And I couldn't get through recording it in the studio without crying. And so I couldn't get through because it's such a joy bomb, that song.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it's a way people don't consciously do it, but they're kind of minimizing what you do when they say, "Oh, you should write a song about this." And Weird Al talks about the same thing where people come up to him and they'll say, you know, hey, you should write a song about Cheetos, or you should write, you know, because you're the food song guy, right? But really, the breadth of what he does, he even does these musical pastiches where they're not parodies of songs, but they're kind of homages to styles of bands he likes, like the Pixies.
Really? I've never seen these.
He did one for like the Police called Velvet Elvis ages ago, you know.
Interesting.
Where it's not really a parody of an actual song, but you hear it and you're like,
that's it's like a mood parody or like a genre parody. Or
in fact, this song, Dare to Be Stupid, that you just played, there's a funny story about it. It is a Devo pastiche. He's taking all of these musical cues that Devo does, and Mark Mothersbaugh of Devo, in some interview, he basically says, I heard it and I was like, he wrote the best Devo song of all time, and I hate him for it.
Interesting.
You know, and
because he knows the Devo spirit. He captured
loves it so much.
Right.
You know?
Well, to me, the thing I want to say is, like, it's something unique to our times. Like, if you think back further, like 100 years ago, before recorded music, like when everybody just played their own song, played each other's songs, like writing a song was one thing, but you just kept it alive by playing it. Of course, we all, like, mimicked each other and just like went with it and riffed on it and built on it. Like that was like natural and part of what happened. Once we got to recorded music, there's all these weird rights issues around it and like how you pay homage and what's copying versus original is this whole discussion about it. And I think it's actually something interesting about comedy and parody in particular, where it actually at least it has legal permission. Like at least you're allowed to make a parody.
Oh.
Whereas I'm curious actually, because I haven't heard of these other things you're talking about that he's done that are more like, you know, genre parodies. I haven't heard of these. I wonder if it's because it hasn't been distributed as widely because it's more murky in the legal context.
They're his originals, is what he calls them.
Got it.
And so, you know, his original songs. In fact, over here at the Luther Burbank in Santa Rosa, he did a concert of all of, it was only his originals. Hmm. And the nerd that I am, I'm out there singing every one of them.
Because you actually knew him.
Because I knew all of them, you know.
Wow. Like, you're a deep fan.
Yeah, and just on the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame note, there is a public kiosk in the middle of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame that people can vote on who they want in. Currently behind Iron Maiden, he's number two. So...
Oh, like people, the people want him to be in the Rock and Roll.
The people want him to be in there, you know. He's a virtuoso, he's fantastic. But and you know, on the theme of your show, that his music was the first time I got to go gonzo about an artist openly.
You were an evangelist for him, kind of.
I still am, you know, but like my or like a, you know, a Beatlemania for me was like Weird Al. Like I could be, whereas if I was blasting, you know, In Excess and trying, and my dad opened the door to me like strutting and acting cool, I was over. I was done. Like, you know, that's why I want to openly with my son, like, you can rap about
whatever
Eminem in the back seat, and I will not spit my drink out when I hear you rapping about baby mama drama when you're 10 years old. You know, like I'm not going to do it. You know, but with Weird Al, my father was basically like, oh yeah, you like this dorky stuff? Okay, you can play it. You know, and then he would listen to Alimony and he'd think, oh, that's a pretty good song because I'm paying Alimony. You know, and,
he got the humor.
Yeah. Yeah, he did. So, but I could be openly a fanboy about Weird Al, and Weird Al's real message is just like, it's okay to be yourself. It's okay to be weird, you know.
And it's true. The fact that he owned weird in his name is like
completely and totally.
He's probably the first person to do that.
Yeah. So yeah, we were very fortunate. We got to be in a cartoon with him called That Sucks, where he plays himself and my band. My bandmate and I play ourselves, and
wow, that's really cool.
Yeah, it was kind of like a big full circle moment for us. So
yeah, because tie the timeline between, you know, the times of listening to Weird Al and In Excess, like, you know, in the late high school or post high school moment, and then to like how you got to Bobby Joe Ebola. I'm sure there's a lot there, but just like, yeah, what's the
So I had that all in my mind that. If you're going to Swing on a Star and Little Old Lady from Pasadena, both are, you know, really, I guess, what would be called novelty songs in a sense. There's humor involved in them. To seeing the kind of the rock and roll of, I guess, the mid to late 80s. And then Weird Al, kind of coming into my sphere. By the time I hit high school, I was just backed up with trauma from, you know, trigger warning abuse and just all sorts of kind of really dark stuff. And I was mostly a quiet kid. Mm-hmm. I was, I had some friends in high school who were like, by the time I was a junior in high school, I still was just mostly quiet, and I was an odd duck, and I had a few friends, but really not, mm-hmm. it wasn't much. And then I had some friends tell me, you need to go into theater. And they dared me. They were like, you have to do this. And if you're in high school theater, starting when you're a junior, you're already late to the game.
Right.
Because there's, you know, kids that have been in there who want to be in there
their whole seventh grade or something. Yeah.
Yeah. So I remember getting up on, we did the musical Brigadoon, and I got chosen to be a cast member, and they put me in it was Brigadoon. I got to do that, and it was fun. But then we got to do Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, and they picked me out as this guy who was like carrying Joseph across the desert, and we did a rehearsal, and I was kind of really making my face cartoony and rubbery and singing, and I remember stopping and looking out and my teacher and everybody that was watching that wasn't on stage during the rehearsal was like on the floor, red faced, laughing. Like,
oh, like somehow your humor came out. People were,
yeah. Like it was like, there was a thing where, and I just thought, I love this feeling.
Right.
Like what happened? Is everybody okay? Like I was in a trance, you know, I was like in this, I was in this state where
That's so cool.
Yeah. So that's where I never ever thought I would be a performer, especially right. My dad was always like, you're not the singer, you're not the
stage. Yeah, he basically told you, you're not this.
Yeah, the stage was for me, you know, all of this.
But then you experienced it, and you're like, maybe this is.
I experienced it, and I thought, whoa, you know. And there was a kid in my high school who was a couple grades younger than I was. My bandmate now, Dan Abbott. And I get out of high school in 1993, I graduate. And the band Green Day from our hometown, they were about a year ahead of me.
And was this before they were really big?
This was basically, yeah, right before. So I saw them a couple times before they got really big. I had a friend sneak me out of the house.
And, right.
You know, still the kind of, you know, environment where it wasn't really like open for me to like what I liked. And I went off and I saw them, and, you know, I got to see them before they got big. So about 94, I believe, is like when they exploded. About a year out of high school, everybody at that point in our region, I think most people in the world, was like, ooh, I want to pick up a guitar and start a garage punk band. And, you know, I hadn't done it. And then there was this guy, Dan, he was still, I think, a senior in high school, or maybe, yeah. And he was wandering. 95 was when our band started, so maybe he was just out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, yeah, he was just out of high school, and he was just out of a band. A band of his had just broke up, and he, on his walk home, he would come by our house. And one day, this girl I liked said, "Hey, this band was supposed to play. Your friend's band was supposed to play my birthday party, and they canceled. I'm so sad about it, you know." And I'm like, I've got a band. She's like, no, you don't. I don't really lie. Like, I'm not like an open liar like that.
Right.
And I don't know what came over me. And I was like, I got a band. She goes, no, you don't. I'm like, yeah, I do. And she said, well, okay, fine. If you have a band, then you can play my party on Sunday.
It's like a dare.
Yeah, and then Dan happened by our house. And I was like, hey, you want to be in a band? And he goes, okay. And we played our first show, and it was absolutely horrible. But it was so fun. It was so fun.
So it doesn't matter. That wasn't that good. You had a great time.
No. And then we just started this kind of folk, satiric folk rock thing. And 30 years on, you know, with some hiatuses, we've recorded over 100 songs, played over 2,000 shows. And, you know, actually, what you just mentioned about how before recorded stuff, about that, the how people would have, you know, it's folk music, right? It's how we share music, right? Dan and our friend Dylan Blackthorne, who will be playing with some shows with us over here in Petaluma on February 21st at Rain Dog Records, they have come up with these these old, you know, I think it was a hobo technique of having a songbook where like they hear a song that a writer sings and they people, it's like Stone Soup. Hmm. They throw it into this book. Hmm. And as they travel around, there's different friends around and
right, people pick up on what song to play. Or...
Yeah. And so they all kind of know the songs mostly in this book. And the book that Dylan has made, I think there's 12, 15, 20 different songwriters that we know who are in there. And so it's this, I think in the age of information, which we started, you know, talking about at the beginning of this, maybe if we were to distill a little bit, right? Make a little more analog. I don't know.
Totally.
You know, maybe that'll give us a bit of sanity, a bit of calm, a bit of peace, right? Rather than the way
we take it. I mean, it sounds like in your particular community of musicians, like that songbook represents something very specific, and it's not everything. You know, it's a particular gathering that is there's relationships and music and that. What a story. If you're just tuning in now, we are listening to Corbett Redford remembering his own relationship to music. This is Remembering Ourselves. I'm your host, Colin Mutchler. And we're kind of right in the middle of Corbett's journey. He shared two songs from his early days and kind of gotten through the end of high school. And that's when he started Bobby Joe, Ebola, and the Children's McNuggets.
I
was reading about you guys online. Like, it seems like you guys were part of some like drama with the punk movement back in, like, there was some like, you know, there was like, I saw on Wikipedia or something, there's some like, you know, it's just like, what a journey you guys have been on. It seems like a cool, I mean, I love your music and your band, and then I just also wanted to say to the audience who's listening, because we haven't said it explicitly, over the last 2 years, Corbett and Dan and a bunch of musicians have put together their first album in how many years?
12 years.
In 12 years. It's called Solar Cantata.
That's right.
And it was a Kickstarter that I supported. I just recently got it, and I did listen to it. It's a great piece of, it's a great album. There's a lot of music.
Thank you.
So many amazing musicians, including some of the kids, like your child, my two kids, and a few other kids from Monterey School came and actually sang on parts of the song. So, and they are going to be performing three shows
in February, one in Petaluma, February 21st, Crockett, California, February 22nd, and Sacramento, February 23rd. But then we're going to the Pacific Northwest, also San Francisco. So yeah, it's all on our website, all that stuff, you know.
Totally. But tell us about these songs that you chose for this current period, because you know, it's a lot has changed. You have moved, as I did also. I was like living in the Bay from 2010 until 2020, basically, and also moved up north to where we are now. Both of us are kind of, you know,
I'm glad you said that, because I don't know why you came up here, but I came up here for peace.
It's kind of true for me too.
I was tired of the I-80 traffic. I was, you know, living in a place for as long as I did that's so congested. I think we just when I leave my house here, it kind of on the Russian River where we are, it asks me to breathe easier.
Yeah, it's true.
It kind of demands that I slow down a bit. It slows my pace. And so I think that these two songs, you know, post-COVID, with the world the way it is, it continues that kind of thread of humor, both of them. One of them is that They Might Be Giants cover of an Erling Berlin song that is just, I long to be lazy, you know? Oh, to not move so fast in the age of information. And the other one by this wonderful kid, the new John Prine, Jesse Wells, a song called Ants, which is, to me, he says so much in his songs. And in this one, it's just, I think it's about a love for life and a respect for...
I had never heard it before. I love this song, too. I heard it. Bugs. It's like such a...
Bugs, yeah.
I had never heard of this guy, and That's cool you call him the new John Prime, because I listened to a few of their songs after, and he does seem very good. Like,
He puts them out on his YouTube channel every once in a while. He just did one called United Healthcare. He does a lot of political stuff.
Totally.
Farm Aid, I think Willie Nelson and those cats embraced him recently.
Cool.
He's a kid. They just brought him in.
Yeah, he looks young.
He is young. And it just great. He's got his sounds. He's the cigarette stained, you know, he sounds like he's 40, but.
Yeah. Well, let's listen to these two, and then we'll close it out. This is Jesse Wells, Bugs.
have a reason, I know why. Don't do it just so they'll die. If you're gonna kill a bug, don't do it just because. I like bugs, and I tell you why. They're alive, so am I. Bugs. I like grasshoppers, cause frogs eat them. I like bees, cause flowers need them. I like spiders, I like slugs. I like caterpillars, I like bugs. I hate crowds, I love people. I ain't down with the plague, but I'm cool with beetles and bugs. Whoa. Bugs are pretty cute, bugs are pretty fun. There's a couple of bugs I try to stay away from. Mosquitoes, ticks, business flies. Bugs in suits, bugs in ties. And I get bit, and it makes me itch. You won't ever hear me complain, cause they never really kill me. Granddaddy long legs, fireflies. Big banana spiders with a bunch of eyes. Birds eat bugs and then sing a pretty tune. Maybe I should look into eating bugs pretty soon. Every time I get an itch, I think of all the things I done stepped on that I never did see. And I go, okay, bugs, one for me. Bzz, bzz, bzz. And I don't know what the menace is praying for, but he probably just thanking the Lord that he don't live in a home and he don't got a phone and he don't sit around all angry and bored. He's just a bug. Buzz on. I like bugs, and I tell you why. They're alive, so am I. Bugs.
That was Bugs from Jesse Wells. And the next one we've got is Lazy by They Might Be Giants.
Every time I see a puppy on a summer's day, a puppy dog at play, my heart is filled with envy. That's why I'm in such a hurry to pass the time away. Like that pup, I'm all fed up, and though it's wrong to be, I long to be lazy. I want to be lazy. I long to be out in the sun with no work to be done under that awning they call the sky. Stretching and yawning, and let the world go drifting by. I want to peep through that deep, tangled wild wood, counting sheep till I sleep like a child would. With a great big valley full of books to read where it's peaceful, while I'm killing time being lazy. I hate to hurry through life and worry. I'll be so glad when I am among the chickens with Mr. Dickens or Mr. Omar Khayyam to keep me company. When I'm tired of poetry, I'm gonna be there dozing with birds composing a pillowy, willowy melody. And when it showers, the bees and flowers will be my umbrella. Until it's over, then in the clover, I'll dream of Rockefeller. As busy as a bee, selling oil to you and me. I'll pity that man. What an oil can he turn out to be? Lazy. I want to be lazy.
A cover of a 19, you said?
20s, I believe.
20s.
This Erling, Irving Berlin song.
1920s. This is Lazy by They Might Be Giants. It actually just came out this year. This is Remembering Ourselves. I'm your host, Colin Mutchler. I'm here with Corbett Redford of Bobby Joe Ebola. And we are here on this strange day, January 20th, 2025. I almost said 24. But we're Yeah, thank you for sharing those. That Bug song, I mean, we were talking about it offline, but Jesse, that guy, that's so good.
He's so brilliant. I mean, most of his songs are either very starkly political, you know, just you know, holding the mirror up to society, you know, satire-based folk country. And then he has songs like that that are just about the joy of life and about respecting, you know, the energies and the people around us. You know, don't step on a bug just because, you know. Right. Don't do it just because, you know. And I think that song and I think Lazy both kind of, that's the energy I want to bring. That's not the energy I bring, but that's the energy I want to pursue. You know, I want to. Everything isn't as serious as it is. You know, think it. Consider people around me. Consider, you know, take care of myself. Take care of, you know, those I care about. I don't know.
Yeah.
And just slow down.
Yeah, we were talking about offline. I think Corbett and I both. Moved to up north to the Russian River area out of the Bay and of cities. I lived in cities my whole adult life, New York City, London, and then the Bay. So, like, you know, I was in the fast paced. I was like, yeah. The future, man, we got to build the future. We got to go hustle, yeah. Like, want to impact the world. And I tried hard, but I was saying this actually when I was introducing the show, because I was a big believer in the internet as like the best chance we had to improve the world. And I do think while some democratization has happened, some new voices have been heard, it also hasn't improved things. Like, we're more disconnected than ever. We dislike each other. You know, we're all hating each other in the comment section. You know, while in real life, we're kind of just like sitting looking at these screens.
Well, there's something new on the way. It's called AI.
Oh, we're good then.
And we're supposed to get along with it. And if we don't, we're going to lose our jobs. Yeah. So... It's going to be the new internet. So that's what I hear.
Yeah. So we're good.
We're good. It'll take care of everything.
Well, I was telling somebody, because I sometimes think, like, you know, this, the AI thing, that wave is like a different generation's journey. That's not ours.
Yeah.
Like, ours was the, you know, social media and the internet.
Yeah.
The first wave of the internet. And we gave it a go, you know, and we largely failed, but we tried.
And yeah, the world is paying for it.
So. Yeah. Yeah. But then, and now our kids will be like, dude, guys, you messed up. Like, what did you do? I'm like, I really did try, I swear. But I think what's different now is I don't actually, even the people that are very excited about it or working on it are not that excited about it. It's sort of like, I think there's an underlying common experience that most people, most Americans, and maybe across the globally, I don't know how true it is, where we are kind of all a little bit too stressed and anxious. You know?
100%. Absolutely.
Like, it's not like most people are doing good.
Even the people that, the friends I have who are pro AI, you know, and obviously there's medical advances, there's these kinds of things happening. Supposedly there's some emergency meeting that happened with the Senate with the open AI guy,
right.
And everyone's like, it's the singularity, it's been reached. And I'm like, he's like, calm down, you know. But my friends who are working with it, who are basically saying, it is the new, like what you just said about democratizing, you know,
right.
it's that's where activism is going to happen. You either learn to play along with it,
right.
Or you're going to go the way of the dinosaur, you know. And I will stand by this. There was some adage that somebody mentioned, is that AI can be here to do the dishes and fix my car, let me make the art, you know.
Yeah.
Let me use the human voice.
Yeah.
You know, and I do think that this is the last I'll say about it, but I do think that people can be struck right to the heart by another human's kind of art and energy, and we know when it's not real. We know. I completely agree.
No, I've played around, and my brother's actually played around with more than I have, but with some of these like music AI generators.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like, music isn't about necessarily just what it sounds like. You know, it's like, why? Like, what's the relationship? Like, you know, when you see a human, or you have a relationship with somebody and they recommend music to you, or you see somebody live and you feel a connection to that human being, it's a different vibration. It's the actual thing itself, not just that it sounds nice, you know, like...
Common human experience. The reason I ever started performing, I knew it instantly. It was that, like, if I'm writing something down and I'm singing these words from my heart and my mind, and somebody out there understands it and feels a little bit less alone because of it, that helps them, and it helps me not feel like a weirdo, because they understood what I said and it meant something to them, you know. So how can that, you can't, that's an equation that I
That's beautiful. I mean, what you just said, I 100% agree. Thank you so much, Corbett, for being here. I really appreciate you coming out.
Thanks for having me, Colin.
This is, you know, how we use music to build connection and relationship. You know, you said it better myself. And so what I want to close out as we transition into the next thing is the song from the album, from the most current album, Solar Cantata, that I thought just like nailed the vibe of this perspective. And I think, you know, just using humor in the face of all of darkness and challenges in life and in society. So as we close out, I give you, or Corbett gives you, pee pee and poo poo forever.
Apologies in advance.
I am a survivor. It ain't been a picnic. Sidestepping the death march in this hellscape triptych. It ain't supplements or walking the dog. Dinner or anywhere for that matter, but I'm smiling and I'm laughing and I'm happy I'm alive. Got the power of that giggle, y'all.